At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, you feel like you're doing more, getting more product out the door? The productivity numbers say you are. Also, one last day in Buffalo, New York. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today. This one is the third day of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. The macroeconomic formula of the day today is pretty straightforward. It's widgets produced per hour worked. You do the, yes, simplified math, I'll grant you that, and you get worker productivity. The Bureau of Labor Statistics told us this morning that after two consecutive quarters of productivity decline, non-farm business sector labor productivity is officially the term. Anyway, productivity was up 0.3% July through September.
I actually felt pretty happy when I saw the numbers today.
Stephanie Aronson's the director and the vice president of the Economic Studies Program at the Brookings Institution. And fine, here is the more complicated math if you insist. Output, widgets, right? Output was up 2.8% last quarter.
Over the spring, output was held down by swings in inventories and net exports, and those effects faded out in the third quarter.
Aha! Hours worked, though, up only 2.4%.
Hours slowed down, and the combination of the higher output growth and the slightly slower growth in hours resulted in a positive productivity number.
Hours not growing as fast as widgets made get you a higher productivity, right? But why do you suppose that's happening right now?
Now it's coming back up again because firms are sort of slowing down their hiring. Output is advancing at a pretty good pace. And that's the normal cyclical pattern that you would expect to see.
We didn't ask Stephanie Aronson what Jay Powell's thinking in five words or less, kinda.
I never like to make too much of any one data point.
Which is actually what Powell would say, but come on.
Obviously, we'd like to see faster productivity growth, but I think the fact that the report showed slowing hours, slowing comp per hour, slowing unit labor costs, I think on balance, that's good news for the Fed.
Stephanie Aronson at Brookings there. As I speak these words, by the way, Jay Powell and the gang at the Fed already have the October unemployment report on their desks. The rest of us have to wait till 8:30 tomorrow morning. Elsewhere in the American labor market, unions, as you've surely heard, are having a pandemic economy moment. The most recent example comes to us from commercial aviation, where contract talks between pilots and some of the biggest airlines are getting contentious. American and United pilots have rejected tentative deals, and Delta pilots have authorized a strike if negotiations break down. And if you're thinking the next sentence out of my mouth is going to be, this is all happening just as the holiday travel season gets going, I'll go to the head of the class. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more on that one.
Contract talks often get strained, but not usually all at once, says consultant Jerry Glass of F&H Solutions Group.
There are more pilot contracts open for negotiations than I have ever seen in my 40-year career.
His firm represents airlines in negotiations, but is not involved in any of the current pilot contracts. Many of them were put on hold during the pandemic. Wages lagged and frustrations built, says Captain Evan Bach, a Delta pilot and union spokesman.
We're spending more time away from our families. We're working longer days. We have shorter nights at home.
And they're being paid wages negotiated in 2016. Pilots are pushing for significant raises and better quality of life provisions. They have a lot of leverage, says travel industry analyst Henry Hartveld.
You know, at the same time, while the airlines know they've got to be generous, they can't spend foolishly.
Airlines are making money again, but an unstable economy could undo that. The building conflict is unlikely to lead to immediate disruptions, says law professor Michael Leroy at University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
It doesn't look like they're rushing out to get their picket signs today.
Airlines, like railways, are subject to federal mediation due to their importance to the economy. So he says negotiations rarely lead to strikes. Rarely, but not never. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Rarely, but not never. On Wall Street today, not so good. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We've been trying this week to give you a sense of the story of this economy right now, the reality behind the data from one place, one city in particular, Buffalo, New York. This used to be a big manufacturing town, Buffalo did, so when we were there a couple of weeks ago, we headed about 15 minutes south of downtown to see that slice of the local economy.
Hey, Matt, I'm Kai.
Hi.
Nice to see you. How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Good to see you. That's
Matt Gaiman is general manager of three businesses here. He co-owns them with his wife, Melissa. We met outside an honestly nondescript brown building on a dead-end street on a colder-than-usual October morning.
All right, it's freezing out here. Can we
go
inside,
it's
please?
Cold.
I put on some protective goggles and walked into a giant room, concrete floors, machinery everywhere, that houses two of Matt's businesses. They're called Metal Locking Service and MMG Industrial. There are people working with giant machinery here, like car-sized pieces of gear and up.
Wow. This is like an old-style machine shop manufacturing.
Yeah, it's a mix of old-style and new, for sure.
You know what else is great? This place smells like industry, which is a stupid city boy thing to say, but it smells great.
No, it's not.
Right?
My favorite thing, my oldest daughter, she used to love coming to the shop because you smell the oils and the mist and stuff.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, it smells like work, right?
Yeah, it does.
So,
and metal shavings? Look at this.
Metal shavings, yep.
There are about 25 people working at the three businesses on the site. Lowest starting wages the past year or so, $22 an hour with full benefits. Metal Locking Services is all about heavy equipment repairs on locomotive engines.
Very niche business. We're the only one that does it, the only one qualified to do it.
Say more about what it is that you do, because one imagines locomotive repair as not very specialized. It says, as a guy who knows nothing about it. Tell me about it.
There's two main locomotive manufacturers out there, one being General Electric. They make the engine out of cast iron.
Yeah.
We have a proprietary process to repair cast iron mechanically. No welding, no heat applied whatsoever. But with the locomotive engine blocks being cast iron, we need to go out and fix them wherever they are. Sometimes they come here. Sometimes we fix them out in the field.
Yeah.
And we are the only qualified vendor to do this repair. So if any GE engine fails around the world, we either have to go do it, or it's got to come to us.
It's a niche thing, but you've got a market, right?
It's
you've
a
got a ready-made market.
Ready-made market. We keep the competition out of our knickers on that one because of the validation process, the time it takes to get people trained to do this type of repair. So
you guys have to be certified by GE, I guess, right? Is that the deal?
Correct. So we own all the IP. It's our repair process. They can't copy it. And we're entering our, I think, fifth consecutive no-compete contract, which
good for you.
Is a wonderful thing.
So look, I bet. So this, what is this called? Engine block, right?
Yep, that's the crankcase or the engine block for a locomotive, correct.
And it's another 16
cylinder.
Right.
Yep.
This thing got shipped here?
Yep, they ship them here.
It's got to weigh 5,000 pounds, 10,000 pounds.
13,000 pounds, yep. And actually today we have some coming in, some going out.
Right.
This one's a completed repair. This is getting ready to ship.
Did you start out in this doing the actual work, or you've been management the whole time?
No, actually, I personally grew up in a steel fab shop in Pennsylvania, I was a welder.
Yeah.
So I was welding by the time I was 5, because my father owned the business.
5?
Yeah, 5. I got the scars to prove it.
Nobody call OSHA on this when they hear this piece.
That's right. So I grew up in steel, but then as we look for a business to buy, this was a natural progression. We do some fabrication here, but mostly it's machining. So I had to learn that side of the business for sure.
Right, right. So, tell me about the people who work here.
So we have highly specialized, very technical skill sets. We cannot hire people and bring them in and plug them in.
Right.
It's 100% on-the-job training at our expense.
How often do you think about inflation?
Oh, every day. When our guys travel, they get paid per diems, they get paid gas mileage, we pay for work boots, etc. All of that we have set pricing on because we're in a contract.
Right.
3-year contract.
Oh,
so
man.
So the price we... as health insurance increases, we have to eat it all. So we have to build that in and be forward-looking as we establish our contract pricing.
Are you worried?
Oh, yeah, we're worried. I mean, on one sense, I'm worried about how are we going to cover our costs in our contract, but tongue-in-cheek, we're a little bit excited because we haven't been able to get any qualified employees in here for years and years and years because the economy's been doing quite well and overheating. So as things taper off, we're looking at this as an opportunity to grow the business.
Yeah. Are you fully staffed right now?
We're not fully staffed. We're roughly 5 to 6 shop employees lower where we need to be for our target.
So how are you going to find those 5 to 6 people?
Well, we're doing some local advertising, but what we're trying to do and set ourselves apart is create this flex time, flex pay, flex benefits type mindset. So the idea was not everybody wants to be making 30, 40 bucks an hour if they can have 6 weeks of vacation.
Right.
Or I need my health insurance 100% paid for by my employer. So we give packages to employees. You know, the total package compensation is roughly the same based on their skill set.
Right.
But we can massage it and get the concentration where they want it so that they jump here.
Is it working for you? I mean, if it's working so well, how come you're still 5 or 6 people short? That's my question.
Well, once we get them here, it's mostly a program we're offering to try to retain the people. And that, so far, is working.
So, look, if you, on the theory that you want to grow this business, right?
Right.
How would you do it? If labor's so tight, right, you've got a certain defined customer base with the GE engines.
Right.
How are you going to grow? Do you have to grow?
We need to grow a little bit just so that we have some redundancy because we have too many people that they're the only ones that know how to do certain aspects of the business. But we are such a small shop in the grand scheme of things. We could triple, quadruple our size and we could keep everybody busy. We don't ever make, you know, active calls to sell the business. It just keeps coming in.
So why don't you have 150 people working here?
Because it becomes, for us, we found it becomes a hard thing to manage. Just getting a toolbox from here to California 2 years ago, no problem. Now, nobody will guarantee it, number one. It takes more than a week, and you cannot run a business that way. It becomes this logistical nightmare. So we're cherry-picking jobs. What are the jobs that are the most profitable? And, you know, as we see that we have to turn down some of those, that's when the triggers to say, we really got to get some more people in here. And that's where we're at now.
Matt, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Appreciate your time.
I think I mentioned earlier this week, Monday maybe, when we started our Buffalo stories, that business filings, that is new businesses being formed, those filings in Erie County, of which Buffalo is the county seat, were up 34% last year. That is compared to 23% nationally. So we thought it might be a good idea to hear from one of those entrepreneurs.
I'm Jennifer Barton. I am 39 years old. I'm a creative arts facilitator during the day. So I work with non-for-profits and developmentally disabled adults in art. Weekends and evenings, I own a creative community art studio. November 2020, we were told that we were going to be going down to part-time hours. because no one knew what was going on health-wise, and working in group homes, that's, you know, the fastest way to spread something. I was like, I don't think I've ever worked less than full time since high school. But when I came home, my boyfriend was like, this is the time for you to start doing what you want to do. And I was like, you're right. I literally just went to Michael's and Joanne's and I was like, all right, let's see what I can do. Poured a glass of Prosecco and started making some coasters. I luckily had known two really like rad women who were local business owners. And she was like, hey, we're doing some holiday pop-up shop stuff. Why don't you bring your clay coasters down and some of your ornaments and some of your earrings and like see what we can do. And I started selling them. Every little bit of money I would make would go back into the business. When we got these stimulus checks, I used some of that money for like, you know, some necessary bills and stuff. But I was very much like, well, I've got this little leftover. Like, what can I do with it? So I was able to get one of my heat presses with that. That summer of 2021, I called it my summer of hustle because, yeah, I was back to full time with my day job. But I was like, I want to see where I can go with this. Being able to start a business in Buffalo, I would never have been able to do that in any other actual city, like, you know, San Francisco or something. Like, would never have been able to afford it. I'm probably even busier than I was 3 years ago, but I'm making my own like way and I'm doing things that I'm so passionate about.
Jennifer Barton there, selling coasters and earrings and the like. She owns the community art studio Nickel City Wax and Wayne in Buffalo, New York. Coming up,
it's the number one killer of all climate impacts.
That is very not good. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials down 146 today, 0.4%, 32,001. The NASDAQ dropped 181 points, 0.7%, 10,342. S&P 500 down 39 points, just over 1%, landed at 37.19. So Buffalo, New York, a little bit of demographics. On the 2020 census, shows that the population in Buffalo grew for the first time in seven decades to 278,349 people. That's a boost of just over 17,000 residents since 2010. That growth and that of surrounding Erie County is primarily driven both by people of color and immigrants. That is according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Bonds fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note, 4.14%. That's according to me. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Okay, a story now about supply chain problems yet to come. The Ford Motor Company says it sold twice as many electric vehicles in October as it did in the same month a year ago. But as demand for EVs is going up, EV makers are facing yet another shortage of yet another crucial material. Not lithium this time. If you've been following the story, you know lithium's been big. We're talking graphite. The United States imports most of its graphite from China. And that, if you've been following the current Sino-American state of affairs, you will know, presents the Biden administration with a bit of an issue, as Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
Even though they're called lithium cells, that metal only accounts for about 4% of the mineral demand in EV batteries. Graphite makes up more than half, and we're not really mining any of that at home.
The U.S. is presently 100% import dependent for its graphite needs.
That's Anthony Houston. He's CEO of a company called Graphite One.
And really, the U.S. has not mined any graphite for more than 30 years.
Graphite One is trying to create a graphite supply chain in the United States, but onshoring takes time. The company has proposed a mining project in western Alaska, but it has to wait on a feasibility study, then permitting, then construction.
So really, over the next 5 years is when we hope to be up and running.
In the meantime, companies like Tesla that import graphite are paying more for the mineral. The price has climbed by nearly a third since this time last year. That's prodded the American battery technology company to onshore some production, in part by recycling old batteries. Ryan Mausurch is CEO.
So we can recover the majority of components in a battery, purify them all the way back up to battery grade quality, and then sell them back into the domestic market.
But until there's enough domestic supply, U.S. businesses are going to have to import graphite, mostly from China. Morgan Bazillion at the Colorado School of Mines says that could give Beijing leverage.
Will we see pushback on that level of economic warfare from the Chinese?
Last year, the U.S. added graphite to its list of critical minerals. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Even those of us who live in generally warmer places know what wind chill is, right? How much colder it can feel if cold winds are blowing on you. There is a corollary to that up at the other end of the thermometer. It's called the heat index, how much hotter it can feel when it's both hot and really humid. And in Miami, where it's hot and humid, by the middle of the century, this century, by the way, the number of days every year where the heat index is going to be above 105 degrees is going to go from 7 to nearly 90. You got AC? That's doable, but thousands of low-income households in South Florida either don't have air conditioning or can't afford to turn it on. And that is just dangerous. Marketplace's Amy Scott is the host of our climate podcast. It's called How We Survive.
In Miami's Little Haiti neighborhood, an older couple, Roslyn and Edser, sit outside in the shade under a tent.
We don't like to stay stuck inside the house too much now. We like out fresh air, you know.
We agreed to use just their first names since they're about to share personal medical information. They're getting a visit from Dr. Cheryl Holder.
But I wanted to just check in and see how you guys are doing with your blood pressure.
Holder is an internist and does home visits through a program at Florida International University. Etzer is retired after an injury.
Before I retired, I was working in a hotel, a restaurant, and landscaping. I was sponsored.
Roslyn supplements their Social Security income by collecting sneakers and shipping them to Haiti to sell.
So we try to make it small as it is.
It's early in the morning, but it's already almost 90 degrees out and so humid. This was early September during a late summer heat wave.
Sometimes the sun coming hot, I stay in my house because I got AC.
But Etzer holds up an unpaid bill from the power company. They owe about $220, and if they don't take care of it within the next 3 days, the power company is threatening to shut off their service.
We're just struggling, you know.
Utility bills have been rising with inflation. Etzer says he doesn't know where the money will come from. It's a matter of health. Both Rosalyn and their son suffer from asthma. Heat and humidity make it worse.
My wife, she get high blood pressure, asthma. When she stand up so much, she foot swelling. She cannot stand up.
As we're talking, Dr. Holder tends to Rosalyn.
When was the last time you took some blood pressure medicines?
I got 2 months.
I can check with our clinic and see if we have any for free.
Okay, that'd be better. Let me help me out. Thank you.
Dr. Holder checks Rosalyn's blood pressure.
Pretty high today.
Yeah.
But I want to bring you inside in the cool. It's too hot out here now.
But then Rosalyn tells Holder about a strange and concerning symptom, numbness on the side of her face.
Can you bring your arm straight up in front like this? Straight up. Okay, great. Can you squeeze my finger as hard as you can? Squeeze.
At which point, Dr. Holder cuts off the interview. She says Rosalyn needs to get to the hospital.
Amy, I have to end. I have to take care of her.
Rosalyn gets the treatment she needs and is doing much better. But this is exactly why public health officials are so concerned about the chronic stresses of heat. It can exacerbate existing problems like high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, and mental health issues. And at worst, heat can be deadly.
It's the number one killer of all climate impacts.
Jane Gilbert is the chief heat officer of Miami-Dade County.
More than the flood risks, more than hurricanes, forest fires, and many researchers will say it's more than all of those combined.
She was appointed last April, the first heat officer in the country. Gilbert says her first priority is to raise public awareness of the danger and what people can do to protect themselves. The county is also trying to slow warming by drawing down carbon and taking steps to cool Miami by planting 1 million trees, especially in low-income neighborhoods.
We have certain neighborhoods that have less than 10% tree canopy. We know that those are also where people are showing up in emergency rooms with the highest number of heat-related illnesses.
Miami-Dade is also retrofitting buildings to make them more energy efficient and updating codes to require cool roofs that have reflective surfaces. And for the 30% of households that struggle to pay the AC bill, like Rosalyn and Etzer, there are grants. Dr. Holder's team managed to get the family a grant to pay their utility bill, so the lights and the AC will stay on for another month. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
There is, of course, a new episode of How We Survive out now, marketplace.org, or the platform of your choice. This final note on the way out today, just because we did jobs earlier a little bit, and tomorrow is jobs day, a couple of quick data points. Number one, Lyft said today it's going to lay off 13% of its 5,000-person workforce ahead, the company's leadership said, of a probable recession. That's a quote, that probable wording there. To be clear, we are not in a recession right now. A lot of people think we are. Also, Amazon is going to pause hiring for its corporate workforce. Those are the white-collar jobs. One more time, October unemployment, 8:30 tomorrow morning, Washington time. All right, speaking of going, we are. This is your moment of economic context, channeling global central bankers here real quick. The Bank of England followed the Federal Reserve today, raised its key interest rate 0.75 percentage point as well. Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. A very quick shout out here to Maria Hollenhorst and Eddie Corbin, who did most of the work. And when I say most, I mean basically all of the work for Buffalo. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money.
Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.